Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Innovator Insights. This is the podcast where we interview successful entrepreneurs, primarily in the product, consumer product space, and learn about their journey, how they got to where they are today. And today, we're super excited to have Michael Serpilla with us. He is the co-founder and CEO of Society Brands. And Society Brands is focused on bringing wellness and self-care by providing clean, toxin-free products that nourish the mind, body, and home. Without further ado, welcome, Michael. We're excited to have you.
Thanks for having me, Henrik. Excited to be here and have a productive conversation that hopefully your listeners can get value from.
That's awesome. First, congrats on all the success with Society Brands. Would love to learn more about your journey. But before we go into that, can you share a little bit with our listeners of who you are, where you live, what do you do when you're not working?
Yeah, absolutely. So born and raised in Canton, Ohio. So for those football fans out there, that is where the Pro Football Hall of Fame is. As a matter of fact, our office is overlooking the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So if you look out this year, I have the Pro Football Hall of Fame stadium right out my window. So I've got that, and that's where a lot of the Hall of Fame festivities are in early August. So big time around here in Canton, Ohio, but born and raised here. Ended up actually going to music school in LA.
Oh, wow.
I was never really that good at school. I, you know, just got average grades. I was ADD, ADHD. Actually, doctors would take CAT scans of my brain when I was a kid, trying to figure out why I couldn't learn the same way that everybody else did. But there was always that side of me to where I would be able to get just obsessively focused on something and go 0 to 60 is faster than anybody. So I always kind of had that gift of really being able to learn things that I'm interested in really fast. But things that I wasn't interested in, I really struggled in school. I certainly struggled with that. So music school is where I ended up going. I was always into music, always a creator, and not so much a singer, but songwriter, producer, piano, guitar, just a number of different things. And dropped out of music school after 2.5 years. Moved back home to Canton with half a music degree. Turns out there's not a lot of employers that want to hire somebody with half a music degree. Go figure. Somebody should have told me that heading in, but nevertheless, entrepreneurship chose me in my early 20s. And I first got in the entrepreneur space with financial services, insurance to start, life insurance sales, then more broad financial services. And by the time I was 25 years old, I had about $3 million a year agency, about 40 team members working. And by 28, I partnered in a population health management company. So it was a corporate wellness program, biometric screenings, genetic testing, telemedicine, just really helping the workforce, employees get healthier, and employers would roll it out to their employee population. And scaled that company from zero to over $150 million a year in gross sales within like a 5-year period of time.
Wow.
We ended up selling that business to our joint venture partner, which was a very large third-party administrator several years back. And Justin, who is my brother, him and I have very much a yin and yang personality from a business perspective, which turns out great in business. Yeah. One of the things that I'd probably touch on to your listeners today is partner with somebody that's different than you. Don't partner with somebody that's the exact same as what you are, because nobody is perfect. Nobody has everything figured out. The people that think that they have everything figured out are lying to themselves, and they should really bring people around them that actually complement them. But nevertheless, Justin had a different skill set, M&A background. So we kind of thought about doing something in the e-commerce space. My organic growth strategy, vision, just entrepreneurship of what I've built, and then him more so on the corporate development side, Then we also partner with Sean Doherty, who's our chief operating officer and also a co-founder with Justin and me. And she has a ton of CPG expertise. She founded a company called Mophie, which was a battery pack for your phone, built that to a $250 million top line revenue business, sold that business several years ago. So we kind of had her as the D2C CPG expertise, me in the health and wellness space, Justin in the M&A. And as they call it, the rest is history, or still a work in progress, always looking to grow and get better. So that's a little bit of a story about myself
Yeah,
and
that's awesome. Lot to
society.
unpack there. So before we go
Last thing that
into
I'll say real quick is what I like to do in my free time is golf. All right, back to you. Sorry.
Awesome. Awesome. So it's really fascinating, and thanks for sharing your ADHD story. I'd say out of the last 10 guests I've had, I think you're the third that have, struggled or been diagnosed with ADHD, had a hard time getting through school because, it's not valued there, understood, and then still, very quickly thereafter been able to find their own path and being incredibly successful in what they do. That's great.
Can I double down on that for a
Yeah,
second?
please.
Because when I was in music school, I actually went to music school with a gentleman by the name of Sam. And he was from London and didn't realize it at the time, but it was actually Richard Branson's son,
Oh,
Sam
wow.
Branson. And after he left music school, I studied up on Richard Branson. And he was dyslexic and ADHD and all these various different things. And that was like the first time that I could realize that ADD, ADHD side of my personality could actually be a superpower. And it always has been a superpower, certainly throughout my career, but really my entire life, it's been a superpower for me when I just get dialed in, laser focused on something like I have with society or anything else I've done in my career. I just get obsessed with it. And I think to do something really, really great, you've got to be obsessed. That's kind of a bad word in today's kind of like, lukewarm society that a lot of people live. But if you're going to really achieve things extraordinary, you've got to have that kind of a personality.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. And then also, I would envision particularly with a personality like that, like you said, to complement with other folks, and not just, people that are the same, that have the same skill set, the same focus.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you've got to have the right people around you. There's not one person that could build a great business. If you want to open up a lemonade shop and just, have a nice small business, then maybe you could do it all yourself. But I think that it's a big flaw in business when somebody says the phrase, "If you want something right done right, you got to do it yourself." And that is the phrase for companies to stay small. And if you want something that's bigger than you, that can scale when you're sleeping or if you're on a vacation or you name it. I mean, we have 200 employees at Society Brands, and it is not because of Michael Serpilla. I am one piece of it for sure, but if it wasn't for all of our team members coming together, we would be nowhere near where we are today.
Right. So if you don't mind sharing, how did you end up leaving music school 2.5 years in? Sounded like it was going well, something you were passionate about. What cost you to make a change?
I just looked at the percentage chances of making a decent living in music. Like, making a few hundred grand a year or something like that. What are the probable odds of doing that? And then also, I am from the Midwest, so I resonated with like eventually raising a family here. My wife and I have three kids, and we love raising our kids here in Ohio. So for me, like that's what I wanted. It doesn't make it right or wrong, by the way. It just is what I was accustomed to. So it was kind of a combination of like the probable odds of going into business making a good living are way higher probable odds than in the music space. That, in connection with I wanted to be in Ohio long term anyway, those were really the main drivers.
That was a very, very mature decision and a great insight. So then insurance, how did you end up in insurance?
Because again, nobody would hire me for anything else. Probably the best way to phrase that. I wanted to do well for myself, and I didn't want to wait. I didn't want to. I wanted to make six figures. I was 22 years old at the time, and I had an opportunity to get in the life insurance sector, and where you eat what you kill, you know, you pay for your own advertising, your own marketing, and everything like that. You're 100% commission, right? So you're not like making, you're not making any sort of base salary. I had all my own overhead, and the very first 12 months, I did end up, you know, making well into the six figures. But like that first week, I was just so hungry. I had like all like audio cassette tapes of when CDs were a thing, and listen to like how, you know, others that were successful. And if you could follow a path of what others have done to be successful, again, the probable odds of you being successful just drastically go up. So yeah, started off into that, found out about the insurance space, and yeah, it was successful for a very long time. And then, you know, wanted to keep on evolving my career. So got into wellness after that. But anyway, I still to this day, a lot of what I know about business and what's made Society Brands successful is a lot of aspects that I learned in insurance.
Yeah, I think it's so great, and I worry my kids are college age, and we talked last summer about what jobs are going to be around 5 years from now, particularly with AI influencing everything. And I do think entrepreneurship is always going to be there, to take control of your own destiny, to go out and start something, and it doesn't have to be sexy or flashy, but find a product that people are buying and start selling it, and you'd always have a job. I don't think there's any more valuable skill set than that.
The beauty of entrepreneurship is entrepreneurs are great at leverage. They're great at leveraging things, right? You could leverage, you could raise capital, and that's a form of leverage. You can have team members. It's leveraging other people's knowledge and expertise and skill sets. And AI is just another form of leverage. That's really all that it is. So what everybody should be thinking in this AI age is, am I going to let the AI sit on top of me, or am I going to be sitting on top of the AI? And like for me personally, I'm going to be sitting on top of the AI because I know how to leverage things and maximize value. And that's what entrepreneurs do a great job with, is finding ways to win. And that is a just such a key component of the world that we're living in, and also adapting to change, embracing the fact that AI is here, whether we like it or not. We could say that there's downsides to AI, and I probably would agree to some of that, right? But like, it's here. So you've got to embrace that change. How could you sit on top of that change? And make sure that if you're building a company, you're an AI-first organization, you're leveraging as much as you possibly can to make it better for your customers. That's the way that I look at it. I find AI really, really exciting, and that's something that we're really diving in deep at Society.
Yeah, that's great. I agree with you 100%. A lot of people have said that, AI is not going to take your job, but somebody understands AI that has your skill set is more likely to take your job. And I think the same is true with businesses. AI is going to have to replace your business, but a competitive business that understands and leverages AI better is likely to beat you.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So, thanks for sharing that. So you have a lot of success in the insurance industry, a successful exit, and then you have the team members. Sounds like you're able to bring together the perfect dream team to start Society Brands. And it sounds like you were pretty heavily influenced by your health and wellness background. Can you talk a little bit more about that, beyond the team? How did you define the brand and decide what products you guys were going to get into?
Yeah, it evolved over time, Henrik. I wish I could say that it was health and wellness, like right from the get-go with Society Brands. It wasn't. It was actually, we were more broad from a category perspective initially. You can see it's publicly available that we own companies that sell kilts and wobble chairs and, a number of different things.
So it was more
But
traditional aggregator in the beginning.
yeah, very
Definitely.
much initially. Just broad category agnostic, more Amazon centric brands. And I think what good entrepreneurs do is not only have a compelling vision that that you should stick to, but also know when you should pivot, because sometimes people stick to something all the way into the ground, versus realizing that, wait, actually you should pivot. As I think Mike Tyson said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. So, like, that is just what happens in business. We started experiencing headwinds that we did not see coming. There was margin compression on Amazon. Advertising spend became a massive business for Amazon, right? And we were acquiring these Amazon-centric brands and more category agnostic. And they were all experiencing the same problems, which is a great deal of margin compression. And top line revenue could stay stable, but if you're just losing all your margin, then eventually top line revenue will start dropping as well. So a couple of years ago, I figured out with my team, it's like there's two pivots that we got to make. Number one is get more sector focused. And that is actually where I brought up my health and wellness background. It's like, well, wait, this is something that I already have a lot of expertise in. And then also when you think of like health and wellness, like this is a brand that we own called Early Bird. It's a consumable. So the beauty with a lot of health and wellness brands in comparison to other retail brands is if you're selling chairs, you might just sell one chair, right? And you really need to maximize that first dollar profit over your customer acquisition cost. But the nice thing with like an Early Bird, they were losing money on the first purchase over their customer acquisition costs. But because their retention metrics are just so strong, because they got a great product and this is in here not for a prop, I drink it every single day. And customers love it, so you can make that money long term with customers versus trying to get all the profit up front. So we pivoted into health and wellness a couple of years ago. And then the second pivot that we made was direct consumer. We believe that actually owning the customer relationships is a really, really important component. So in 2022, about 90% of our revenue was on Amazon and only 10% was off of Amazon. By 2023, about half of our revenue was on Amazon. The other half was off of Amazon.
So in just 12
At the end of
months, you were able to shift that much?
through M&A, by acquiring additional direct consumer brands like an Early Bird that's $10 million of revenue. And is doing very well, and all of that's their direct consumer site. And then others as well, Vitality Now, Primal Life Organics, Clarifion, Cleanomic, and our most recent partnership that we just announced yesterday, Crunchy. So a lot of these brands are direct to consumer. So we've shifted. Now we're a $160 million direct consumer platform in the health and wellness space. And about 85 or 90% of our revenue is in that health and wellness vertical. And about 70% of our revenue is direct consumer, primarily through Shopify, where only 20 to 25% of our revenue now is on Amazon. So you see just kind of this massive shift that happened over a few years period of time that's allowed us to be where we're at today.
Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe you could double click on that and talk a little more about it, because what you're talking about is also from an outside investor's perspective, right? Much more attractive when you created this business. It's not dependent on any kind of marketplace or platform where you're at their whims and their algorithms and things like that. Can you speak about that a little more?
Yeah. The nice thing with a direct consumer brand, and by the way, we believe in omni-channel. We think that you should be wherever the consumer is. And We're working to expand further into retail and other e-commerce marketplace. We like TikTok. We like Amazon, but being reliant on marketplaces, I think, puts a brand in a very, very vulnerable spot. And the nice thing, if you're going to be reliant on one thing or another, you might as well be reliant on your own website, where the customers are literally going to your website and making the purchase on your website. Because there might be a marketing channel on how that customer gets to your website, like Google or Meta or something like that, that is no longer successful, and maybe that customer acquisition cost is rising up. Well, you could acquire that customer with other channels, right? There's other ways that you do this. We've just recently started doing, we did a deal with iHeart to launch
I saw
podcast
that.
marketing
That's
because
great.
we think a huge opportunity, more so top of funnel marketing, comparison to always just direct response marketing. So we think that that's a huge value add. But anyway, you own kind of like the platform because the consumer knows where that is. They're not going to Amazon where the loyalty is. Maybe they make their way over to Amazon, but then you get a branded search, which is a very profitable Amazon sale. So those are just the reasons why we like D2C, is just that customer loyalty, having access to that customer data, and customer actually transacting on your site in comparison to just only on Amazon.
And with your ability to raise money or your existing balance sheet, you're able to acquire businesses to move in that direction. Do you think it's possible for folks that are, I don't want to say stuck on Amazon, but are predominantly on Amazon today to make that shift on their own in their own businesses?
Absolutely. And we've actually done that for a number of our Amazon-centric brands. It's a different animal a little bit. So you've got to become a little bit of a different animal in order to succeed on direct to consumer in comparison to Amazon alone. However, you absolutely can do that. And that's a natural evolution. It's not a bad thing if a brand started off on Amazon and you're acquiring customers. So let's say that you're a $5 million revenue business or $1 million or whatever a brand is today on Amazon. Good news, customers like the product. There's a product market fit, right? And you have something that customers love. So that at the heart of whether it's D2C, retail, Amazon, et cetera, that's what you need more than anything is, do you have a product? Do you have a brand that consumers actually resonate with? And if you've done that initially on Amazon, it's not that you can't shift, but now, like building out the brand, it probably would be easier for you to change the name of your company on Amazon if that D2C brand wouldn't necessarily resonate. As long as you still have the same products, you have more of a brand that customers would resonate with more. I think that that's probably the biggest thing that you got to look at, because oftentimes, when customers make purchases on Amazon, their loyalty is to Amazon. They may or may not know it's your brand. Not always, right? That's not always the case. There's exceptions to that rule, but that is, I think, probably the base case there. So the first shift for an Amazon brand to go to D2C, I think, is okay, well, what's the name of your company? What's the brand? What does that brand stand for? Because if you're going to make that matters more if people are going to your website than what it does on Amazon.
So not necessarily thinking so much of how do I convert my existing Amazon customers to D2C customers, but rather leveraging what you've built, the product market fit that you have, and then start acquiring new customers in a different way.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. If there are customers, there are people that just have a behavior of buying on Amazon, and trying to get them from being a consumer of buying on Amazon to your.com, that's not for everybody. Some people just like going into the retail stores, right? So we should be there, just like we should be on Amazon. But the biggest key is just channel concentration. Make sure that you are not concentrated on that channel, because Amazon is very good at maximizing profit for themselves, and not saying that in a bad way. It's just the truth of it. And you as a brand should be good at maximizing profit for yourself.
Yeah, great points. One thing you talked about that I'd love to chat a little more about is the consumables, the ability to bring someone in and, like you said, not just buy a chair and you're done, but buy something that people have to replenish. Maybe I assume that you have sell a lot of subscriptions. Can you talk a little bit about more about that and how that impacts the business fundamentals, maybe unit economics and things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The biggest thing is customer cohort data. Be obsessed. One of the core values that we have at one of the core values that we have at Society Brands is data driven. We let the results decide. I could have an opinion on something, but if the data proves me wrong, I'm always just going to follow the data. I'm not emotional or ego driven on it. It needs to be my idea because I'm the CEO. If there's data that supports something else, we go with the data. And the beauty of that data is studying the customer cohorts of consumable brands. You could identify if you spend $1 in advertising, what's your initial AOV over CAC? That's obviously very easy metrics to be able to access, right? Your ROAS is something that's very easy to access. There's also tools out there that allow you, like Lifetimely is an example of one. We also use Triple Whale. Triple Whale is another tool that we use for a number of different things. And the beauty of these software provider tools that are out there is they allow you to track data that if you know how to leverage that data, it could help you grow your business. Let me give you an example. Let's say that your initial AOV, your average order value over your CAC, your customer acquisition cost, is unprofitable. And it takes $80 to acquire a customer, and your initial order value is $60, meaningfully not profitable, right? But if it's a consumable like vitamins or supplements or foods or beverages, right? Makeup is another one, right? Skincare products. It's consumable in nature. You can then track the lifetime value of that customer. And then you could figure out what is the 6 month lifetime value of that customer. So let's say if the CAC initially was $80, the initial order value is $60, but your 6 month lifetime value is, I'm going to make a big number, say it was $200. Home run. Spend money on ads. Whatever you did to acquire that customer, spend as much money as you reasonably can, as long as the data continues to keep on looking like that. So that's kind of what we look at on a regular basis. You don't need to look at your LTV to CAC like every day. It's not going to change all that much, right? But like on a monthly basis, on a quarterly basis, get strong level of conviction in those numbers, because if you know what your gross margins are as a business, and if you know what your CAC is, and if you know what your AOV is and your lifetime value and all these things, you mix it all up and then you say, all right, this is either profitable or it's not, right? You just back into the numbers. And if you back in the numbers and it's profitable, then you just pour gasoline on the fire. And you just scale. And that's the beauty of e-commerce and direct to consumer.
And for folks that aren't familiar with cohorts or tracking cohorts, you're talking about basically looking, one cohort would be then the number of customers you've signed up in the month of January, for example, and then you're tracking them month by month, seeing how many of them are still around, right? And that's how you get to the LTV, the lifetime value.
Yes, that's exactly right.
That's awesome. How does inventory and cash flow come into that? I get it from the EBITDA profitability perspective, just throw more money at it. How are you guys looking at that? Obviously you have a stronger balance sheet than most solopreneurs. Can you give any advice on how to approach that?
So what I would recommend is grow profitably If you're like to get to $1 million of revenue, you should and profitably get to $1 million of revenue from 0 to $1 million of revenue as a brand. It's really not capital intensive if you're doing the proper amount of testing. So what's your product? What's your brand that you're looking to launch? And then you're doing split tests, right? To understand what advertising channel's working. AI today, by the way, you can just do so much more split tests. You could produce so much more creative content. Pretty sure AI could even media buy for companies on a regular basis now. I mean, like there's a number of different things that AI can help brands with. So you understand, it's like you're a scientist, right? And you're just trying to understand what ad is going to perform. You spend some money on tests, right? And then you figure out what ad is going to perform. You're tracking those metrics with like third-party tools that you could use. And you are seeing what is your initial AOV over CAC and try to make sure that that's really profitable initially. Long term, it might be hard to stay real profitable on that because as you scale, it's just harder. But initially, to acquire customers, since you've not hit that D2C, pool of customers all that much so far. Eventually, that pool runs dry, and you got to go to other channels, and really become an omni-channel brand. But like initially, your AOV over CAC should be profitable. You should try to find a way to make it profitable. And if you're doing that significantly, and if you have strong gross margins as a business. Strong meaning like 70% gross margin, very reasonable, 80% gross margin you could do with a direct consumer brand. We see it with a number of our brands.
Yeah. And just
So
to clarify that, when you talk about gross margin, that is landed product cost to your warehouse and not sort of end cost to get to consumer.
yes, that's right. I think everybody looks at it differently, but our COGS is essentially fulfillment. And manufacturers, suppliers, right? So that's our COGS, then which gets us to our gross margin, and then we have our selling and marketing expense as a company, which gets us to our contribution margin, and then our contribution margin gets us to our op. Or, and then there's OpEx, right? And then the delta
EBITDA.
between selling and marketing and the OpEx is what our, EBITDA is, profit. So that's kind of like how we look at it. But to go back to your question, if you have strong margins, and if you're growing profitably on your ROAS, don't take all that money out of the business. You should be able to replenish inventory very easily and grow profitably without you actually having to raise much capital, any capital. It just depends on what your personal financial situation is. And then eventually over time, your ROAS might start to go down a little bit, and you're studying those cohorts to understand what the customer cohort data says, how sticky the customers are. Is that profitable? You're still growing. D2C, e-commerce marketplace, do brand marketing as well, not just bottom of funnel marketing. That's another huge thing that I think that a lot of brands just focus so much on bottom of funnel. And they don't think of like how important their brand actually is and how that can actually drive down your customer acquisition cost over time because people actually know what the brand is.
Yeah, can
So
you talk a
it's
little more
important.
about what you guys do in that aspect on the brand side?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that we're doing right now, as I mentioned earlier, is podcast marketing. The beauty of podcast marketing is you do have the ability to track attribution. There's also TV ads where digital TV, there's some really great opportunities on tracking attribution there. So the great thing is it's not like brand marketing on what it once was, which you put a billboard somewhere. You just maybe a customer buys because of that, maybe they don't. Biggest thing is being able to spend your marketing dollars with conviction. When you could track attribution, you could spend with conviction. When you can't track attribution, it's still not that you shouldn't do brand marketing because you need to have that as part of your arsenal. But it is hard for that to be 80% of your spend, right? If you can't track it. So we're more of the line of top of funnel marketing with the ability to track attribution is a good thing. But then there's other things like we sponsored a PGA Tour golfer. That's more top of funnel marketing. We can't really track that from an attribution perspective, but we know the audience and the demographic of people that watch PGA Tour. And it's there on the brand visibility perspective, but something like that wouldn't be like 50%, even 10% of our ad spend, right? We would do that on an as needed basis as we see value.
And just to clarify, when you say podcast marketing, you're not talking about you having your own podcast or you being guest on podcasts. It's sponsoring podcasts, correct?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So iHeart, we did a deal with them where a number of their top podcasters that have millions of downloads per month, those podcasters would actually talk about our brands. So they would actually talk about the brands. They would create a call to action. And so that's kind of like the advertisement, if you will. So we have, I think, don't quote me on this, five or six or seven top podcasters on iHeart that's promoting Society Brands portfolio companies, or at least several of them. And that's what we mean by podcast marketing. And AG1 did that. That was AG1. I think that was their playbook, is significant podcast marketing. And the cool thing is a stat here for your listeners. I'm not trying to create competition for myself, but I'm just trying to add value. 45% of consumers in the US listen to podcasts, but only 3% of advertisers actually spend there.
Wow,
So just
that's an
a
amazing
very
stat.
big blue ocean for us advertisers.
Michael, this has been incredibly insightful and helpful. Thanks for sharing so openly and candidly. Would love to keep on talking for hours, but I know you're a busy man, so we're gonna let you go. But before we leave, would ask you if you have one, what are you excited about in the year to come, and where can people find your brands or learn more about your brands, and then any final advice you have to our listeners.
Yeah, so what I'm excited about for the next year is AI very much. We're also working on a number of more celebrity and influencer deals. We think that that is a really key component. We're always looking at M&A opportunities. So we're a very acquisitive company, so we're looking at that as well. So those are probably three things that I would say that I'm excited about for the years to come. For the years to come. And as far as where to find us, societybrands.com, you could reach out to us. I'm on LinkedIn, so if you type in Michael Serpilla on LinkedIn, you should be able to find me all right. We also, if you're a brand that's looking to get acquired, you could email us at leads@societybrands.com. You could check us out there. And then your last question, Henrik, was any additional advice? What I would say is it's going to be harder than what maybe you initially thought. But if you are a resilient entrepreneur and you're willing to just stick through it and kind of be numb to the good things and the bad things that happen in business, and you just stay focused, consistency wins. And again, we talked about probable odds. Your probable odds significantly go up on winning if you never stop. And the reason why there's such a high failure rate with entrepreneurs is because they give up. They don't actually just keep persevering. So just commit to it, be a dog on a bone, so to speak. And if you do those things, I'm sure you could be successful.
That's great advice. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Congrats on all the success, and we look forward to see what happens next.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henrik.
All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.